Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I called it on Monday, and I want to hit it again right now. Alvy, hit me with the horns. I called that Monday. Here's something else I said before, and I will say it again right now. This is an FDU house. Fairly freaking Dickinson. Greg freaking Horrenda. Jahlil freaking Jenkins. Darnell freaking Edge. Mike freaking Holloway freaking Jr. I'm not paid to root, but if my Fairly Dickinson Knights complete an amazing comeback for their first NCAA tournament win in school history, damn right I'm going to root, and you're damn right I'm going to lead this show with it. What did Greg and I talk about on Monday when he came on this show? His mantra of, quote, "All I tell our team all the time that you will forever be judged by what you're not supposed to do," end quote. Yeah, well, personally, I am not supposed to lead a nationally syndicated sports radio program that is carried throughout the United States and Canada with Fairly Dickinson basketball. But I will, but I am, because they just did what they weren't supposed to do. So I'm doing what I'm not supposed to do. They weren't supposed to win an NCAA tournament game. They weren't supposed to come back from down double digits against Prairie View A&M and win. But they did. Do you remember that part of the interview on Monday? If not, let me reset it for you right now. And you can take a nice, long drag of that Horrenda juice. Quote, "I tell our team all the time that you will forever be judged by what you're not supposed to do."
You're the best.
I love that quote. Tell me what you mean by that.
Amen, brother. I just think in life, anyone can do the ordinary. And these guys, if we win a game, it's history. And they'll forever be remembered by something that they probably shouldn't do. Don't be ordinary, man. Don't be ordinary.
There was nothing ordinary about that last night. That was a jungle karma win for the ages. I've said it before, I'll say it again right now. I don't know how the karma works. I just know that the karma works. If a guest comes on the show and does a good interview, good things happen to that guest. I don't direct it. I can't control it. The karma is, and always has been, bigger than me. And the karma was strong last night in Dayton, because that first four game played out exactly as Greg Horrenda said it would. Did you catch his breakdown of the Panthers on defense?
Prairie View really, really guards. They're like, when I was at Holy Cross, we played Arkansas, the 40 minutes of hell, the year before they won the whole thing. And they're not, you know, obviously Arkansas won a national championship, but at our levels, they're the Arkansas of the SWAC, and they're really well coached. Byron Smith really gets after it. A lot of respect for them. So it's going to be a dogfight.
Sure enough, Prairie View A&M was getting after it on defense. They did wreak havoc. And while it wasn't 40 minutes of hell, it was 25-plus minutes of hell. They had hands everywhere. Fairly Dickinson was rattled. But that's the thing about my Fairly Dickinson Knights. They get knocked down, but they get up every time. You're never going to keep them down. They were down when they lost three straight to Lafayette, Providence, and Holy Cross in the early part of the season. They were down when they lost to LIU Brooklyn, and they were 6-11 on the season. But they got back up again. They always get the hell back up. Last night was the Fairly Dickinson season in a nutshell. They're down early, then they went to work. And by that I meant they went to Jahlil Jenkins. He went to work. Greg Horrenda, again, was on the show Monday. Jenkins showed up huge on Tuesday. My man was unguardable. He took an ill-advised shot before a timeout, and the coaches had a message for him. Message heard. Because coming out of that timeout, he had 7 points and an assist in the next four possessions. 20 of his 22 points came in the second half, and it was one monster possession after another, like the one he had to tie the game at 59.
Back to Jenkins. Between the legs dribble, being watched by Gary Blackston. Town the timer. Jenkins down the right lane line. Right-handed shovel. Good! Jenkins gets it to fall. We are tied at 59.
And it wasn't just Jenkins. Darnell Edge was doing work also.
Jenkins darts to his right. Hand off Edge. Catch and shoot. Yes, sir! Darnell Edge, as accurate as they come. Edge connects from downtown.
And then there was the man in the middle, Mike Holloway Jr. He and Coach Horrenda go back a long way. They've got a bond. And he came up huge last night when it mattered most.
Jenkins shifts to his right. Jenkins on the attack. High pass corralled. Elijah Williams with 9 to shoot. Into the paint. Bounce it to Holloway. He scores it off the glass with 26 and a half seconds left. 80-76 FDU.
Thanks to Westwood One, NCAA Radio Network. Man, I got to tell you, watching that game, by the end, I was like that legendary Eagles fan.
When Muhammad Ali was down, did you count him out? When Jiminy Cricket was down, did you count him out? This is the comeback, Doug. 2-3. Did you see DeMarco Murray? This is the game, Doug. Woo!
Did you see Jaleel Jenkins? This is the game, dog.
This is Woo! The game, Doug. Woo!
And Jenkins was the first one to say that win was all about the coach, all about Horrenda. Remember, less than a year ago, Greg Horrenda was in a San Antonio hospital with multiple blood clots, a fever north of 104. It was bad. It was really, really bad. But the guy battled all the way back from that. His players saw that. They said they were inspired by that. Jenkins said, quote, "We knew we had to fight for him. He doesn't really talk about it too much, but it motivates us, and we know we have to keep fighting like he did," end quote. So that's a coach who was in a hospital bed a few months back, a wheelchair, then a walker, then a cane. Now he's dancing in the tournament, dancing in the locker room, dancing on chairs. Hell freaking yes, G. And as he said near the end of our interview, the program needed that.
We got to win a game, man. And ultimately, and I know you got to go, but our goal, we've never won.
Coach, I got nowhere to be. You take your time.
I got to win. We have to win a game here. Like the last time we talked, and we had a great talk, and we ran into a buzzsaw. Florida Gulf Coast should not have been in the first four, but we absolutely have to win a game to make sure that we can do one thing, and that's create history at Fairleigh Dickinson University. We've never won a game, and if we do that, you know what? The school, the state of New Jersey, Hoboken, North Bergen, St. Peter's Prep, all the good people out there will be a part of it, and it's happening tomorrow night at 6:40.
Hoboken, North Bergen, St. Peter's Prep, react to me! As he said on Monday, anybody can do the ordinary. If his guys win a game in the tournament, it would be history. Last night was history, and it was awesome. Don't be ordinary. Don't be ordinary. Fairleigh freaking Dickinson. Greg freaking Horrenda. See you in hour 3, G. Greg Horrenda is my guest. Greg, it is so good to have you back. What's up? How you feeling?
Rome, I think you know how I'm feeling. It's a tremendous morning here in Salt Lake. The sky is blue and the mountains are white. And nights are balling tomorrow night against the Zags. So we're very, very excited and just happy for our university and our players.
Oh, my man, what a game last night. What an amazing game. There was so much emotion. I love the emotion that you showed, you and your players both showed on the court after that game. You were hugging them. Mike Holloway Jr. was talking to you. In fact, what was he saying to you, and what were you saying to him and your guys on the floor when that game was over?
Well, you know what? Mike Holloway, we don't text. My players, Rome, less of me is better. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ride him hard. I coach him hard, but there's mutual respect and love. And before the game, Mike texted me a personal text, and he just said, "Coach, I told you, baby, I told you." And I just said, "Mike, I love you. I love you." And that's ultimately what it's about, man. And when you have the players not only playing for themselves, but playing for their school and their coach, and the coaches are just, it's just, it makes 35 years of doing this well worth it. And they were hard 35 years, but it's about the players, man. And
Jaleel Jenkins. I don't know how much you saw of him. What'd you think of him, Rome?
God, I was blown away. Greg, I thought he was absolutely incredible. Shop O'Reilly Auto Parts. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock. Brands that you can trust, like Wagner Brakes, Monroe Shocks, Superstar Batteries, Wix Filters, and more. They can even get those hard-to-find parts, most with free overnight delivery. I thought the kid was incredible. You and I talked about him on Monday, and then he showed his incredible game. He showed his even bigger heart. He took that ill-advised shot shortly before a timeout in the second half, and then he completely turns it around, and he dominates that game with 20 of 22 in the second half. What's it say about him, Greg, that he's doing that as a sophomore?
It's you know, my assistant then, he's now the assistant at St. Bonaventure's, Dwayne Lee, who played at St. Joe's and played at St. Anthony's. He dragged me out there to see him play, and I'm like, are you really? And you looked at him, but then you learned to love him. And right before the – I don't know if I'm being redundant, Rome, but right before the conference tournament, I told him, listen, Jaleel, you weren't first, second, or third team of the conference. Let's show him now that you're the best point guard in the conference. And now he's showing he's one of the best point guards on the East Coast. And – last night, man, I mean, Darnell kept us in it, and Darnell was awesome, but that second half, you hit it on the head. You know, he took the building over. I think he stole Reggie Miller's heart. I mean, what he does is infectious. I said it, and I'm glad, Rome, I came through with what I feel, because I say what I feel, and these kids are not afraid, and we're not afraid to be in Salt Lake and take on this axe tomorrow night.
We're talking Fairly Dickinson Ball. Head coach Greg Herrera, my guest. You did call your shot. Jaleel backed it up, and Reggie did love him. Reggie loved him. Reggie kept making the point, Greg, during the game that this kid can get anything he wants. He can get anywhere he wants. He can get anything he wants.
Yep.
Go back to Darnell Edge. I want to make sure we give him his credit. He had 18 of his 33 in the first half. He kept you in that game. You came on the show and told the nation how good he was, and then he hit 7-9 from deep. What do you make of how he showed up when it mattered most?
Now, Darnell Edge, if he doesn't have the first half that he has, Rome, we're not in the game. I mean, he was a man possessed. And we had a divine intervention in our pregame meal. Our president, Chris Capuano, spoke to the team. He's a big fan of our team and the university. He's doing great things. But he specifically told Darnell, just what I tell him, is just go get it. This is your moment. Be aggressive. And he had an eye last night. His numbers, I think, have to rate with one of the best performances ever in Dayton. And they're Curry-esque in the NCAA tournament. His efficiency rating was off. I'm not an analytics guy, but my assistants were just comparing him to things that haven't been done in a long time. Darnell Edge, you know, he was the MVP of the entire game. Jaleel in the second half, but. It's a great backcourt, Rome, isn't it?
It's a great backcourt. It's a great backcourt. Fairly Dickinson head coach Greg Herrera, my guest. It's a great backcourt. But to that point, you've got a lot of talent on that roster now, but did you win that game with talent or did you win that game with heart and character?
Every timeout, the team was assuring me, and especially Jaleel and Darnell and Mike, with their eyes, that we're going to be okay. Every time I'm like, okay, you're saying that, but we need to do it. You know, we were down 7.5, and they rolled it to 13 to start the second half. And it was like, okay, guys, I appreciate you being confident, but you've got to back it up. And we went to a little bit of a matchup, and we mixed up things. And then, you know, like Prairie View was shooting 32% going into the game and shot 75 in the first half. They made 15 threes, and we knew
it.
That couldn't sustain. And when they got a little bit cold, we made the run. And when we make runs, man, we make big ones.
Greg Herrera joining us. They couldn't miss from three, but you're right. You can't sustain that level. Now, you and I talked about your mantra. You will forever be judged by what you're not supposed to do. Teams
that
start the season the way your team started the season are not supposed to reach the NCAA tournament. You're not supposed to win when you get there. Teams are not supposed to come back from double digits down, but you did that too. How does it feel to do what you're not supposed to do?
It feels good for the plane ride, and now we have another opponent, and this is something that we're really not supposed to do. But when you do that, it's gratifying to see when I was getting interviewed by Dana Jacobson. I wasn't emotional until I got to the interview, and I saw the players behind me. And when you're a young boy and you're a young coach, you dream about having a team jumping up and down, advancing in the NCAA tournament. And it just hit me all at once when I saw Jaleel's face and Darnell and the hug from Mike and our fans. We had a fan bus. They got up at 3:30 in the morning and came from Hackensack, New Jersey to Dayton. It's like a 9-10 hour, you know, ride. It's really, really, we got incredibly faithful and loyal supporters.
Listen, Greg, I was going to ask you about that. There's that video that got pushed out afterwards, and that fan bus came from Dayton, and you told them after the game, I got you. I've got you covered for dinner. They understandably went nuts. Finish that thought for me. What inspired that, and what does their support mean to you?
Oh, God. And, these, our fans, they were, you know, just, they were students. They were people that really, quite honestly, couldn't, you know, afford to get a flight and jump on a plane, and people that work, and but people that just live and die and come to our games. So the least I could do is just, I had to extend my love, and I hugged them all, signed autographs, but I'm like, yo, man, we got to buy these guys, you know, lunch or dinner, and I got it. You know, we've got to, my mother used to say, well, it's a great expression. I don't know on the West Coast if you hear it. You've got to ring the doorbell with your elbows. Have you ever heard that expression?
I have never heard that expression. What does that mean?
It means you're bringing something to the table. So you have a bag
Great.
Of donuts. You got a loaf of bread, and you ring the doorbell with your elbows. You're bringing to somebody. You're not taking. And my mother taught me that when I was a young boy. And if I go to somebody's house, and if I, you know, you bring the bottle of wine, you've got to do the right thing. Our fans deserve for me. To step up in a small little way. I rang the doorbell with my elbows.
Man, I could not love that any more than I do. We're talking to Greg Herrenda. Listen, you made the point to me on Monday, Rome, we got to win. We have to win. We got to win
That's
a game.
Right. No.
And you did that. But at the same time, I want to go back to that point one more time. You are forever judged by what you're not supposed to do. Well, you're not supposed to do what you have an opportunity to do next. For a long time, the talk always was, eventually a 16 is going to get a 1. They did last year. UMBC did just that. I know you have immense respect for Mark Few and Gonzaga, but how nice is it for you to be able to point to UMBC and say, see, when you step on the court, the seating does go away, and it's just two teams playing basketball.
You hit it on the head, Rome, and I told my team this last night when we got into Salt Lake, and I can't say the words because I said I won't say them, and I'm not going to, but the seed, there's no seeds in tomorrow night's game where there's two teams, they're going to be wearing white, we're going to be wearing blue, and we've got to do everything we can to win the basketball game, and that means we have to play much better than Thursday night. There's no 16. There's no one. There are two teams that want to advance. And we have to be hungrier. We have to be solid from rock to rock bottom. We have to pass better. We have to guard better. We have to do so much just to hang around and stay around. And our guys will believe like they did last night. We watched film this morning after breakfast. We're on the bus going to practice. And we have a plan, and I know Mark's got a plan. He's a great, great coach, and I know he's a smart guy, so he doesn't take anybody lightly. They're not taking us lightly. So they know Jaleel Jenkins now. They know Darnell Edge now. So it's a little bit of a chess match, but we have to outmaneuver them, but ultimately we have to outwork them. We have to play basketball for 40 minutes. And, again, I listened to Jalen Rose, and he said it, the best team always does not win in this tournament. And hopefully, I think maybe the best team won last night. I think ultimately we were a better team, although they were very talented. Prairie View was well coached. You know, tomorrow night, I don't know if we're the best team, but guess what? The best team
doesn't always win.
Well, I agree with that. I agree with that sentiment 100%. Greg, really quick, before you go, you had another great quote I want to ask you about. Quote,
yep.
If any of the kids that are watching this tournament, I know you want to watch Zion and all the great ones, so do I, but these are the heroes. The kids that are like the people watching TV that get better every day. That's why March to me is mad. It's mad. Can you lay that out for me? What do you mean by that?
It's so easy. I'll never forget the first home visit room I ever did. I was an assistant at Seton Hall, and the head coach couldn't make the home visit in Florida. The player's name was Roy Leaf. I got to the home visit. There was 12 people in the home visit, and I was nervous. I was a young assistant, and it was during the O.J. Simpson case, and they were watching it on television. I sat down. I didn't really know how to start the whole process, but I said to Roy, I said, Roy, listen, the heroes in your life are not the people on television. They're the people that you watch television with. And the same thing goes. Everyone looks at Zion and think that's your hero. The real heroes are the Darnell Edges, who had no scholarships, 17 years old, came on campus, 4 points first year, 9 points, 14 points. Now he's a star. Jahlil Jenkins, you know, we beat out Towson to get him. And guess what? No one picked him first team, second team, third team, all conference. And he owned Dayton, Ohio last night. Those are my heroes. And that's what this tournament exposes. And you do such a good job of it, Jim. You look past the obvious, man. And the obvious is that the Dukes and the Carolinas and all the great teams, and they duly deserve credit. But there's so much more to the tournament than just that. And we have two jewels on top of the rest of our team. We're talented, man. Caleb Bishop goes up and down. We're a good team. Elijah Williams, Mike Holloway. I can't sell my team enough, but the heroes are the people you watch TV with, man.
The heroes are not the people on TV, but the people you watch TV with. My man, you got a million of these things, Greg.
I know.
Where do they come from?
I don't steal them. You know what?
No, you don't.
When I was a kid, I watched every talk radio. I called into John Sterling's radio station on WMCA in New York. I used to watch David Susskind in New York, Nick Schapp, Marv Albert, Bill Mazur, and now I can't tell you how much respect I have for you for the homework that you do. Colin, I don't want to bounce other names because I know you, what station we're on, whatever, but when I'm driving at night, Freddie Coleman, I listen to these guys, and it's just part of me. My brother and myself, we used to go in the backyard and not only play the game one-on-one, but we would be Marv Albert. We would do the starting lineups and run out one by one. It was a dream, and now the dream is real, and it doesn't seem real, but it happened, bro. It happened.
My man, you're beautiful. Greg freaking Horrenda. Basketball coach of Fairleigh Dickinson, and they got their win, and next up they've got an amazing opportunity. It's Gonzaga tomorrow, 7:27 p.m. Eastern. Greg, seriously, I could not be happier. I've made the point. You know me, I've been in this game a long time. I've been in this business a long time. They don't pay me to root. They don't pay me to root. They pay me not to root. I can't
That's
lie to
right.
you, brother. I was rooting yesterday. It was beautiful. Proud of your kids.
You know what? We felt it. Hey, Rome, before we go, we're going into practice here at the Utah Jazz practice facility. I have my radio show. I've been on your show a number of times now. At some point, I know you're busy, and I know I need to have you on WFDU so our fans back in Jersey locally can listen to you. And I want to talk about the Jim Rome story because I think there's so much more to you than what people see, and that's what we do on my show. The offer is there. I'm not going to bother you, but I just had Dick Vitale on last week. I'd love to have Jim Rome on.
I accept. Hey, listen, I think I speak for absolutely everybody when I say nobody has time to go to the post office. You're busy. Who's got time to fight all that traffic, the parking, the lugging of your mail and packages? It's a big pain. This is why you need Stamps.com, one of the most popular time-saving tools for small businesses. Stamps.com eliminates trips to the post office and saves you money with discounts that you can't even get at the post office. For instance, Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. And with Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. Not to mention, it is a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Right now, I have this amazing offer for you. It includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. All you have to do is go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the very top of the homepage, and type in Rome. Really easy, amazing deal. Stamps.com, enter Rome. We are joined right now by Jeff Jones. Jeff, it is so good to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
Jeff, I'm doing great. Eager to talk to you. It's been an amazing season for so many reasons, and I want to get to that in a minute. But first, you're about 24 hours away from the school's first NCAA tournament game in 8 years. What's the mood like among the players and your staff right now?
Everybody's excited. I was real pleased. You know, sometimes you worry, you know, after you win your conference tournament, if there's some sort of a letdown and like, okay, we got here. And guys aren't as focused. I found out yesterday in practice that our guys are really locked in. We had a terrific practice, great intensity, and I thought that was a good sign because I guess I'm greedy, but you know, it's not enough just to make the tournament. We want to see if we can you know, pull off the upset. We respect Purdue. We know they're a really good team. But, you know, we're excited to get a chance to compete against them.
Jeff Jones joining us. I think, in part, Jeff, you answered my next question, but I was going to say, you've been to the tournament as a player, as an assistant, and as a head coach. So what is it about the NCAA tournament that makes it so special? And then what is your message to your players about how to approach this experience?
You know, I think in this era especially, everybody that's any kind of a basketball fan at all or basketball player, basketball coach, you've grown up with the NCAA basketball tournament, the big dance, being one of the premier sporting events in the United States. So I think, you know, as you're growing up, there's always that dream of participating and playing in that tournament. And you know, for a group of guys that have never been there before, this is a big deal. It was a big deal getting here. But now that we're on this stage, as I said earlier, you know, we're just excited to have the chance to compete and see if we can keep playing.
Well, Dominion head coach Jeff Jones, my guest. You know, that point you made about the conference tournament, how there's always kind of a concern about you have to exert so much energy to get through that there might be a letdown. When you consider the program being the size that it is and that you're in a conference with teams that you know are going to battle you every single night, and even if you win that regular season title, you still have to win the tournament to get into the tournament. Knowing what's on the line, what's it take from a physical and a mental standpoint just to get here?
Well, it's a grind. there's no question. And you know, the way we did it, we had three really close games. The quarterfinal game against Louisiana Tech, we win at the last second. We win in the last couple seconds in the semifinals against UAB, and then you know, we win the championship game against Western Kentucky, who we've beaten twice in the regular season. That was almost a blowout. We won that game by six points.
Right.
So you know, it was you know, physically demanding, but I think more than anything emotionally. So that why it was why I was so pleased yesterday after, you know, having essentially a big day off on Sunday and Monday. You know, that they had gotten all of that celebration out of their systems and were really focused.
Hey, Jeff, for those who do not know, when you arrived at Old Dominion, the school was coming off a 5-25 season. You're in the tournament now. That's great. But the school was 5-25. What was it about the opportunity there that made you feel like that was a place where you wanted to be and you could win?
Well, number one, the athletic director at Old Dominion, Wood Selig, is a good friend of mine. And we'd worked together when we were both at Virginia. So I knew about his vision for the program. The Old Dominion program has had a great tradition and quite honestly had really good success prior to that 5-win season. The bottom just kind of fell out, but I felt like it had great potential and that this would be an opportunity for me, to go to a new place, a new challenge for me, and you know, try to build things back, you know, the way they had been and are expected to be at Old Dominion. You know, the first year we were able to turn things around, and we won 13 more games than the year before. Second year, we ended up making it to the NIT Final Four in Madison Square Garden. So it didn't take long to get the program back on solid ground.
No, it didn't. Old Dominion head coach Jeff Jones joining us. Jeff, as I mentioned off the top, this has been a remarkable season, and it's also been a very challenging one. In September, you announced that you had a recurrence of prostate cancer. You had been initially diagnosed and treated in 2015 and then learned in 2017 that it had reoccurred. What kind of emotions did you feel when you learned of the reoccurrence?
Shock. You know, I had had surgery. I had had radiation, and things looked good. I was cancer-free for over a year. And then when I found out that it came back, it just kind of hit you. And it wasn't something at that point, I didn't want to go public with it. There was just a very small circle of people that knew. But then last summer, I had to start treatment. And I knew with the side effects and everything that goes with the treatment that eventually word would get out. And that's what kind of, I think, spurred me to, let it go public. I wanted my players, if they were going to hear, I wanted them to hear it from me. And then if it was going to be public, I wanted to bring greater awareness, to prostate cancer occurrence and, try to encourage the men out there to get their PSA tested. It's a simple test and one that can detect the prostate cancer early and allow it to be treated much more effectively.
You know, I want to be very respectful about that, Jeff, and I would imagine that going public with that is not an easy thing to do, but by doing so, there's no telling how many people you might help. Also, with the announcement being made, you made it very clear that neither the cancer nor the treatment was going to affect your performance or your desire to win. What was it like for you, though, when you had to share that news with your players?
You know, I didn't want to scare them. Several of them had already known from the previous years, back in 2015, our two senior captains, B.J. Stith and Ahmad Caver, they had already known, that I had gone through that part of it. But with the reoccurrence, people hear the word cancer and all of a sudden, that can spur on all kinds of bad thoughts. And I didn't want to be too emotional because I didn't want to scare them. And I wanted to be honest with them, and I wanted to assure them that they were going to get my best, that this wasn't going to sidetrack me, that it wasn't going to take me away from them, that I was going to give them my very, very best, and that they could count on me regardless of my health situation.
You know, Jeff, it's so true. I've shared the story myself, but my father back in the day was diagnosed with leukemia. And you're right, it's such a terrifying word. And I think a lot of people hear the word cancer and they assume that it's a death sentence or they don't know what to do. They don't know how to react. So you're right. I could see where you didn't want to share that. In fact, when my dad was diagnosed with leukemia, he and my mother said, "We're not telling anybody." And they didn't for a long, long time. And they also, like you, had a company and they ran a company. So that makes sense to me. Now, one of the things that you said, though, is that the team just fights. The team never makes an excuse. How much is your team a reflection of you? And then how much are you a reflection of your own players?
Jim, that's a great question. I don't know, but there are some similarities, and that's the thing I've been so proud of this year's group. We're a good defensive team. We rebound the basketball really well. But I think the thing that we've done all year long is compete and not blink. We've been in a lot of close games. We've won a bunch of them. And when we get in those situations, it's just kind of like business as usual. And I could probably cite plenty of times where things didn't look good for us, but these guys just kept plugging along and didn't get rattled, didn't get shaken. And we were somehow or another able to pull out a win. So, I'm proud of them. And if I had you know, something to do with that, then that's great. But it's a great group of kids.
Yeah, Jeff, you've been amazing about sharing your story. If you don't mind, I just want to ask you one more thing, because when I've talked to other men who have battled prostate cancer, they say that the battle is real. It really is a battle. And there are days when you feel awful and the side effects of the treatment are miserable. How do you go about approaching the tough days?
Well, number one, I'm very fortunate, both with the players that I have, and I don't know if they'd notice, but I know I can trust them that they're going to get out there. They're going to do what we need them to do. The second thing is, having my wife, Danielle, best friend, confidant, the whole deal, and having that support network, being strong enough, I think, to trust her and to trust my staff. I have a great staff. I think that's the big thing, that when there are the tough days, not trying to be Superman or anything, but understanding my limitations and trusting those quality, great people around me, that they're going to take care of everything, that I just need to make sure that I, if it's a day that I need to get some extra rest or, not come into the office until later on, that I can trust them, and they're going to, they're going to help me, they're going to help the team, and we're all in this together. I think that would be probably the biggest thing.
Jeff Jones, my guest. So finally, knowing that you've got this great challenge ahead of you, you can't wait to get after it, get out there, compete, give it your best shot. But knowing everything that you've gone through and what the team has gone through, I'm kind of curious, the emotions when the confetti fell at the end of the conference tournament and you knew you were going to the NCAA tournament. What was that moment like?
It was just a confluence of a bunch of different emotions and thoughts. Obviously, just pure joy at winning the championship and going to the tournament, watching our players out there dancing around and being so happy, knowing how hard that they had worked. A sense of relief because we've been close, but we haven't been able to cross that threshold. And I know we're a mid-major program, but there's expectations to get to the tournament. So there was some relief there. And then the emotion, because it has been a challenging year, gone through some tough times. And so after we went down and we shook hands and turned around, the confetti's coming down, and the emotion just kind of hit me, all at once. So I just kind of took a seat on the side and tried to soak it all in. And it was an emotional moment. It wasn't any one emotion, but it was like a combination, a confluence of a lot of different things. And it was a special moment. And I'm glad that I was fortunate enough, blessed enough to be in that position.
What a great, great story. And not finished yet. The 2019 Conference USA Coach of the Year. They are Old Dominion, 26-8, Conference USA regular season and tournament champs. And the next challenge in front of them is Purdue tomorrow night, 9:50 p.m. The head coach, Jeff Jones, our guest. Jeff, so great to have you on the show. I really appreciate you and you taking the time to share your story. Good luck tomorrow night. We'll all be watching.
Thank you, Jim. Enjoyed it. Appreciate it.
The Oakland Raiders added Vontaze Burfict because, of course, they did. Vontaze Burfict is a Raider because when you have a chance to add a player who has too many fines and suspensions to even count, you definitely jump on that, right? Immediately. And the only thing better than signing a player with Burfict's track record is signing a player with Burfict's track record and history with Antonio Brown. Now that's outstanding. I'm not going to say that signing Burfict is a bad look for the Raiders because of his history with Antonio Brown, because I'm sure they can patch it all up. As Burfict said, quote, "We're on the same team. It's one goal. It's all positive, man. He's a great player. I'm going to approach him just like I do all my other teammates. There's nothing negative here. We're on the same team. We're trying to win a championship here. Honestly, we might be the closest friends on the team. You know what I mean? So, just got to go along with it, and I can't wait to meet him." End quote. I mean, there's a hell of a lot to unpack in that quote, such as the fact that I love a guy who ended Brown's 2015 postseason with a helmet-to-helmet hit saying, "It's all positive." I love that about as much as I love Burfict's claim that from back in the day, Brown, quote, faked a concussion on that play. Because that's something guys routinely do. They fake concussions after helmet-to-helmet hits. Or that he chased that last year with a shot that Brown called a, quote, nasty hit. And that was coupled with a hit on James Conner. It resulted in $112,000 in fines from the same game. Oh, and in that game, one play after Burfict hit Brown in the head, he reportedly turned to Juju Smith-Schuster and, according to Ben Roethlisberger, yelled, "You're next." I mean, that's, I don't condone it, but that's incredible. You're next. And I love that Burfict is the one saying that things are good between he and Antonio Brown. Yeah, because that's his call to make. Now, Antonio Brown did tweet, quote, "Just talked at King55Tez, black and silver, baby. Hashtag Raider Nation. Hashtag bully season." All right. All right, I guess. If it's good with Antonio Brown, I guess it's good with me. Knowing that, and knowing that people do change, I'm not going to say that it's weird that Burfict and Brown are teammates. Just like I'm not going to say it's weird that Raiders GM Mike Mayock referred to Burfict as, quote, non-draftable back in 2012. That's when he was working as a draft analyst. He said, quote, "I watched three tapes and really didn't like him as a football player. I think he's a non-draftable kid," end quote. Right. And now he plays for Mayock. Nor am I going to say that it's strange that the Raiders just signed a guy who had 33 tackles in seven games last year, and who only played seven games last year because he missed the first four for violating the league's substance abuse policy. Now, I will say this. It is kind of weird that the team was falling all over itself to sign a guy who isn't just dirty. He's unreliable. Actually, check that. Very reliable. You can't count on him to be on the field, but you can count on him to get suspended or fined on a regular basis when he is on the field. You can set your watch to that. Vontaze Burfict getting fined and suspended is about as much of a guarantee as the sun rising and setting. When you sign a contract with Vontaze Burfict, do you also schedule looking at the schedule to see which games he's going to miss due to disciplinary action? Because you should. Availability is the best ability, and getting suspended for headhunting does not make you very available. Let me run down a quick list of names for you. Check this list of names. Antonio Brown, Martellus Bennett, Cam Newton, Greg Olsen, LeGarrette Blount, Roosevelt Nix, Max Williams, Anthony Sherman. No, that's not a football team's roster. That is the list of guys who Burfict has cheap-shotted. And it was compiled by my CBS colleague, Ryan Wilson. And that might be only a partial list, because the list of guys that he has cheap-shotted is so long, a media outlet would practically have to dedicate one person just to cover all the dirty plays. It's amazing. You know the guy's got a track record, but then when you sit down and you actually compile it, there isn't enough time. There are helmet-to-helmet shots on defenseless receivers, kicks to the head, ankle twists after a tackle, dirty plays, and more. Listen, I've always been really careful to call a guy out for being dirty. It's a label that I would not throw around lightly, because once you ring that bell, you cannot unring that bell. But Vontaze Burfict is the epitome of a dirty player. Better yet, is there a dirtier player in the league? I mean, honestly, is there? Because if there is, he's not coming to mind. What this guy does is not old school, throwback, hard-nosed football. It's dirty. It's cheap. It's the kind of thing that I thought the league was trying to get rid of, not add more of. I mean, my man really can't help himself. He gets fined or suspended, then he comes back and he does it again. We've seen this over and over again. The guy's a threat to everybody on the football field, himself included. But that's not just me. That's not just me, some talking head. Take it from guys who play the game. Take it from Joe Thomas. Joe Thomas said last year that Perfect should have been suspended for that hit on Antonio Brown. Take it from Dante Stallworth. Stallworth tweeted last year, quote, "I'm very reluctant to call a player dirty. IMO. For one to earn that label, it must be blatant that you are intentionally trying to injure other players with dirty play." With that said, Vontaze Burfict is a dirty player. End of tweet. So I guess I could even say, forget why are you signing this guy? Why is he still allowed to play in the league? His highlights are essentially the video that the league sends to teams in the preseason about what is not allowed. I mean, if the goal is to make the league safer, is the league safer without this guy? His presence is terrible for player safety. If your goal is to make your team better, your team is probably better without him. He's not available. What this guy can do on the field is limited by the fact that he can't stay on the field. And it would seem that Perfect simply cannot help himself from playing dirty. No matter how much discipline this guy faces, he's right back to doing it again. He can't stop himself, and the Raiders could not stop themselves from signing him. So what's that say about them? No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has got a winning game plan for pro contractors. With thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the single largest national footprint in the game, when the pressure is on, count on Ferguson. We are joined by Ron Hunter. Ron, it's great to have you back on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. We're actually on a bus headed to the airport right now.
Man, that's perfect. That is absolutely perfect, because I was going to say, after you beat UT Arlington in New Orleans on Sunday, you said in your press conference, the guys had a drive ahead of you to get back to the campus, and quote, "This is about to be the best party bus you have ever seen. We're not going to a restaurant. I canceled it. We're not going to a hotel. I canceled it. We're getting with my team. We're getting with our families. We're getting on a bus. You're going to hear us all around the country." So let me ask you first, what was that ride home like? On the bus,
I tell you what, man, it was great. It was a party bus. We had our families on there with all the players, and it was just a great opportunity to just spend time with the team and just us. And so, I tell you, we made a 5-hour bus ride seem like it was 45 minutes.
Ron Hunter joining us. Now, Ron, the thing is, the televisions on the bus did not get the selection show, so you had to pull off the road in Mississippi to watch the selection show. What kind of a place did you end up at, and what was it like watching the show there?
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy, because 10 minutes before the show, my SID came to me and said, "Hey, coach, you know, in 10 minutes the show starts." Well, they said we couldn't get CBS on the bus, so I told the bus driver, I said, "Listen, first opportunity you get, let's just stop." He said, "Coach, we're in the middle of Mississippi." So we drove, and we got out the first exit. We saw a bar, restaurant, truck stop area, and my guys didn't want to get off the bus. So I got off the bus first, talked to the guy, and there were about 8 guys, about 75. We're drinking beer, and we walked in, and, man, it was great for us and great for them.
Ron Hunter joining us. Ron, you cut out for just 1 second. Let me ask you, how many people were in that place when you walked in, and did they know
there
who you were?
8 guys, probably about between 75 and 85 years old, drinking beer.
Did they have any idea who you guys were?
Have no clue. No clue. I think they thought this was like a hostile takeover. I had all these guys from Atlanta come in at 6'8", 6'9". They thought these guys, we were taking over the bar.
That is great. Ron Hunter joining us. So Devin Mitchell said that while other teams were celebrating Selection Sunday in players' lounges and arenas, the fact that you guys celebrated in a random joint in Mississippi was perfect. He said, quote, "It's us. It's always just been us." So how would you describe the attitude and the approach of this year's team, Ron?
Well, you know, we had everybody back from the team a year ago. And last year I thought the kids were just excited to be playing. We played Cincinnati really tough until the last 4 minutes, and we couldn't make a shot. This year, just finishing practice about an hour ago, they're a lot more focused. They want to go and win games. You know, I've got 5 or 6 seniors. We shoot the ball really well. We beat Georgia. We beat Alabama, so we're not afraid of the moment. The stage won't be too big for us. And so our kids are ready to play. This isn't just about going to the NCAA tournament. We're making this a business trip.
We're talking to Ron Hunter. You know, to that point, you've made going to the tournament a regular thing and pretty much the expectation now at Georgia State. Man, but there's still nothing easy about this. How much pride do you take in the program that you, your staff, and your players have built over the years?
Well, you know, we really have. before we got here, they had had 8 straight losing seasons. And so to be able to go to the NCAA tournament 3 times in 5 years is a lot of hard work. But mostly it has to do with our kids. Our kids have bought into what we wanted to get done. And it is, you know, we got guys in our program. The only thing they know is going to the NCAA tournament. And so the expectations they'll pass down to our young guys, that's how you beat a culture in a program.
We're talking to Ron Hunter. Now, DeMarcus Simons had 27 in last year's conference title game, but only 10 in this year's. That's a huge difference. The difference being you had 5 guys in double figures, 5 starters in double figures. So what's that say about your depth and the balance that you have with this year's team?
Well, that's why I think this year's team is better. Last year, DeMarcus had to really carry us. And even in the NCAA tournament against Cincinnati, he was great, but our other guys really didn't play like capable they were supposed to play. Now I've got guys, we can really shoot it. We got 5 guys averaging double figures. He's averaging less points, but we're a better team, and he's actually a much better player now than he was a year ago.
Well, of course, Ron, you and the program went legend back in 2015 when your son RJ hit that dagger to beat Baylor. And after that legendary showing in 2015 when you beat them, you were everybody's favorite team. You yourself could have gone elsewhere as a coach, but you decided to stay right where you were. Why was that?
Well, you know, one of the things I think is really important, you know, guys just make jumps for all the wrong reasons. I'm not chasing money. I'm chasing happiness. I love being here. I know at some point I know that there'll be time to go. But at that particular time, it wasn't the time. I wasn't ready in that regard. Just, I'll know when if someone offered me a job, if I've got to think about it, I'm not going to take it. It's one of those situations. I'd rather be happy than have a lot of money. And so I'm happy right now. And so for me to leave, it'll be a place where I feel like, okay, this is a place I can go and be happy.
What a great take that you're chasing happiness, not money. But then again, I guess on some level, Ron, I can make the argument that you've got the best team in the state of Georgia and you're winning every single year. Is there an argument that why should I go someplace else when I'm killing it right where I am?
Yeah, you know, that's one part of it. But I want the state of Georgia to be good. I want Georgia to be good. I want Georgia Tech to be good. I think it's important for the state of Georgia to have multiple teams in the NCAA tournament. But again, if it's time for me to leave, I'll leave. And I'm serious about this, Jim, that I'll wake up, somebody offer me a job, and I'll say, that's what I want to do. And I'll just do it, especially if I feel like there's nothing more that I could do at Georgia State. But right now, man, I'm having so much fun. Why mess with that for free extra dollars?
Ron Hunter joining us. All right, Ron, so you draw Houston in the first round. You know the deal in the NCAA tournament. Every single team is good. I know you're not going to be intimidated, but how do you go about preparing for a very good, very tough Cougars team?
Well, we have to play our style. You know, we shoot the ball extremely well. If we're making threes, if we're shooting our 3-point shot at a 40% clip, I feel really good about the game because our defense is also pretty good. I know that they get a lot of credit for their defense, but our defense was really good also. And so I think the last message I gave to my guys, be extremely poised and rebound the ball. We do those two things with 3 minutes to go, and it's a one-possession game. I feel like we'll win the game.
Ron Hunter joining us. Now, Ron, in a recent ranking of the coaches in the NCAA tournament and what they were like as players, you came in at 27th. Now, you went to the tournament 3 times as a player at Miami University. You played with Ron Harper. You went up against guys like Len Bias. What do you remember about those trips as a player?
I don't know what I remember, but I was so disappointed at 27, GM, man. I couldn't get in the top 10.
Right.
I was really mad. Matter of fact, you brought it up. I'm mad now that you just said it.
Sorry about that, Ron. Sorry about that. It's like, and the problem is you can't go out there and prove it to somebody right now, right?
No, man. You know, remember, I tore my Achilles. I got an artificial hip, and I got a bad knee.
That is something else. Hey, listen, though, you play with Ron Harper. I haven't talked to Ron in a number of years. He was one of my favorites. Man, I love talking to Ron Harper when he played in the NBA. What was he like to play with? And do you still stay in contact with him?
Oh, yeah. We usually talk about once a week. And, you know, we were friends in high school. We actually went to college together and decided to go play at Miami together. So we've been friends since we've been 15 years old. So I always tell him, you know, he's got 6 championship rings and he rebounded all of my missed shots, and all of a sudden made him millions and became an NBA star off my missed jump shots. But that's my guy. He's like a brother to me, and he's actually been at every single one of my NCAA tournament games, and his son's actually playing at Rutgers this year, so I don't know if we get an opportunity to get to Tulsa on this trip.
Let me talk to you for a minute about MyBookie. They have been in business for years. They are growing so fast. And the best part is they pay out so fast. So when you do call that 12/5 upset this year, make sure you celebrate because you'll be pocketing cold, hard cash. March Madness is the single most exciting action-packed sporting event of the year. I'm telling you, even grandmothers fill out a bracket. Place your bets with MyBookie right now before you miss out. Bet with the very best. only at MyBookie. Try for yourself by going to MyBookie.ag today. If you deposit right now, MyBookie will give you a 50% sign-up bonus up to $1,000 just for entering the promo code ROME. Enter your promo code ROME. You play, you win, you get paid. Only at MyBookie.ag. The LA Rams were coming off a huge season. Remember, they went from 4-12 to 11-5, from perennial doormats to division champs. Most teams in that situation take a victory lap. They get fat. They get happy. Not the Rams. They didn't do that. Instead, they got aggressive. They leaned out. They got better. They went out. They added Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, Sam Shields, and Dominican Sue. Then what happens? They turn that into a Super Bowl run. Now they're coming off a Super Bowl. They're coming. They came this close to winning the whole thing. And yet again, they're not taking a victory lap. They're not patting themselves on the back. They're making moves. They already added Eric Weddle. They already re-signed Dante Fowler. And then this week, they took it to another level, starting with the signing of Blake Bortles. Listen, if you want to crack on Blake Bortles, you go right ahead. It's quick. It's easy. It's not that original. And let's face it, he's not the greatest starting quarterback ever. In fact, he really isn't even a starting quarterback. But Blake Bortles as a backup is fine. That works. Especially if he's Blake Bortles as a backup for $1 million a year. That also works. In fact, that works pretty well. Because you get a guy with experience in pressure situations who you only will need in case of emergency. And if you do have to break that glass in case of emergency, you're going to put him in an offense that has a ton of weapons. No, Blake Bortles is not the Teddy Bridgewater of backups. But aside from Teddy Bridgewater, who is? So the Rams had a nice offseason. And it got even better last night with the addition of one William Clay Matthews III, the pride of Agoura Hills, the pride of USC, and a monster of the 818, and he's coming home. And I couldn't love that any more than I do. 818 for freaking life.
818 for life.
I grew up in the 818. 818 for freaking life. I grew up in the 818. The Claymaker grew up in the 818. So that's the end of an era in Green Bay, but the start of one in Los Angeles. Matthews leaves Green Bay as a six-time Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champ, the franchise leader in sacks. In other words, he leaves Green Bay as a Green Bay legend. And when you're a Green Bay legend, that's as elite as it gets. The only thing better than being a legend in Green Bay is being a legend in the 818. And that's what's next. You see, Clay reportedly had offers, more money. Offers on the table for more money, but he turned them down because he wanted to come home. Amen, brother.
Amen, brother.
Amen, brother.
Brother.
Clay Matthews returning to the Coliseum is a match made in heaven. The Rams need help at linebacker and an outside pass rush. Matthews, we know, can do both. More importantly, the 818 needs Clay Matthews. I'm not going to say that the Rams have just added the guy who was rolling to one Pro Bowl after another, ripping off double-digit sack seasons like it was nothing. But they don't need that guy. What they need is a guy who gives them options and who can get after the passer when they need him to do that. And Clay Matthews can do exactly that. You think Clay Matthews might like playing in a defense with Aaron Donald? I do. You think Clay Matthews might be a good fit in a Wade Phillips defense? I do. And if you're from the 818, the only thing better than winning a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers would be winning a Super Bowl with the LA Rams. How do you beat that? Get a chance to play close to home, compete for a ring, and go to the Sagebrush Cantina on the regular. Sagebrush Cantina, nachos, tortilla soup, the Sagebrush Sampler. The only thing missing from the Sagebrush Sampler is the Lombardi Trophy. Tijuana Egg Roll, Taquitos Dorados, Quesadilla, El Matador, and a Lombardi. There's your sampler. So Clay Matthews coming back to LA is awesome. The only thing better would be Clay Matthews coming home and bringing the Lombardi with him to the 818 for life.
818 for life.
Once again, full disclosure, Clay and I went to rival high schools, arch rivals, our main rivals. He went to Agora High. I went to Calabasas High. Also, in full disclosure, we still own you, Clay. Calabasas always will. But you know that. It's fine. You're back home where you belong. 818 for life, baby. Can't wait to run into you, Clay. Let's see if we can get them to bring back the Renaissance Fair. That was an Agora. That was awesome. If not, I'll see you at the Canyon Club or Wood Ranch or Wizens. Your call, big dog. Welcome home, Clay. Welcome home. They say you can never go home. Yes, you can. He is. He did. And if this guy could turn that in, cash that in for a ring, look the hell out. 818 for life, baby.
818
for life. Life.
Travis DeCure is my guest. Travis, nice to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So you're going back to the NCAA tournament for the second straight year. I'm guessing that the feeling never gets old, but how different is it for your players when they've been there before? Do they approach it more like a business trip?
Definitely. You know, we just had that conversation as we ended practice. You know, there's a celebration Saturday night with the championship. You enjoy the selection Sunday. Monday's practice, high energy, kind of enjoy the moment again, and then buckle down Tuesday, Wednesday, try to get a little more business-oriented. So today we were a lot more focused and got a lot more done, and now we're transitioning into competitive mode.
All right, so let me talk to you about a couple of your guys. You go back to the Big Sky Championship game. Ahmad Rory was scoreless in the first half, and afterwards he said, quote, "I had my head down. I felt like we all wanted it so bad, but we just weren't playing well," end quote. So what do you make of how he played in the first half and then how he turned it around in the second half?
You know, exactly what he said. You know, he was pressing. They all were. I thought offensively we were hurting ourselves in terms of just playing one-on-one basketball. The ball wasn't moving. Guys were trying to make too many things happen and win in one possession. And once we regrouped in the locker room and got a little more focused on the defensive side of the ball, we were able to create opportunities in transition to kind of get each guy going. And Ahmad's one of those guys, once that ball goes through the basket one time, he pretty much heats up, and that's pretty much what he did for us in the second half of that game.
Travis DeCure joining us. Now, Ahmad also did not win the Conference Player of the Year award, which may have been disappointing, but the two of you had a conversation on the way to the airport before the tournament. What was your message to him, and what do you make of the way he showed up in that tourney?
Well, you know, we knew that there was a chance he wouldn't get it. I know he was selected preseason, but that's by the media. But at the end of the day, there's guys in our league. There's a lot of guards in our league that score a lot of points, and winning is more important in Montana than individual accolades. And his commitment to success would pay off in the long run as long as we buckled down and did what we needed to do. So in our conversation on the way to the airport, it was kind of, you know, look, we need to win three in a row. It's a big weekend for us. If we can get this done, you'll get your award. When it all is said and done and when it's more important, and we agreed that the conference championship or conference tournament MVP would be more valuable than the regular season because that meant we were playing an NCAA tournament.
We're talking Montana basketball, Montana going up against Michigan in the West. Now, after the game, you had Rory and Donovan Dorsey meet with the media, and Rory said, quote, "They've been best friends forever, going all the way back to AAU ball." So what have they both meant to you and to your program?
I think they're an example of our cohesiveness and how we go about recruiting. Most of our players are from three areas within the West Coast region. So there's very few guys in our program that are on the floor that don't know a small portion of the guys or hadn't had a relationship with them before they got to campus, which allows us to play together, compete together, and also handle adversity together. And I think those two are a prime example of that. You know, we speak of family a lot, and families really, you find out a lot about your family through adversity more so than through success. And I think those guys had a chance to go through a lot of that this year and help bring the rest of the group together.
You know, you're looking for these guys to compete because you are a competitor as a player. You're a competitor as a coach. When you're recruiting, can you coach that kind of competitiveness into somebody, or do you have to find guys who already have it?
We typically, through recruiting, try to find guys that already have it. The most important thing for me is finding ways to pull it out of them. And there might be guys that have some talents or some things in their heart that they might not have had tapped. at a young age. And so, you know, it's important for us when we evaluate young men to make sure that there are some competitive traits in them. And most of the time, if we're fortunate, we get the kids that have already shown that. But a lot of that comes with maturity, and paying attention to details in life outside of just basketball is always the biggest thing for us, and it allows us to develop a relationship that is always going to allow us to be the best coach we can be in those circumstances.
Montana head basketball coach Travis DeCuire is my guest. Now, you're not just going back for the second year in a row. You're facing Michigan for the second year in a row. That's kind of unusual. What was your reaction when you saw that matchup?
Really? We're doing this?
Right.
You know, it is what it is. I think you can make the most of it either way. If we're playing someone new, I think that it's huge for the guys that are back for a second time 30 years from now when they're telling stories to their children and family that they played an NCAA tournament twice. They've got two different stories and two different teams and a large number of potential NBA players that they played against. In this scenario, it's a little different. But it is a different Michigan team than last year, and maybe better defensively if you look at the numbers, maybe more versatile offensively in terms of how they approach scoring, could be a tougher team to beat. And I think we're a lot different as well. So, yeah, the names are the same, but I think the teams are different enough for us to get excited and look forward to another opportunity.
Yeah, Travis, before you go back to your playing days at Mercer Island High School, and those who know the Seattle basketball scene know how intense it is. What was it like coming up playing ball in that area?
Well, growing up in Seattle, it was untapped when I grew up, and it was rare that you'd have a Division I basketball player come out of Seattle. It'd be one a year, pretty much, you know, through my high school career and middle school. It was soon after that the region got tapped after guys like Doug Christie, you know, come through and reach the national scale, and then coaches started coming back. And so then in the 90s is when it started to blow up, and now, you know, it's a national recruiting scene. So for me, to have come through that is huge to look back and see the success of so many student-athletes that came behind me. And it's going to continue. So for me, growing up in Seattle is very competitive. It's back when, you know, we didn't have the workout guys. We didn't have the small group, large group workouts. AAU wasn't as big. It was more what you got done on the streets and, you know, behind the schools or a little bit of rap ball outside on the blacktop that created your competitive drive. You didn't have adults controlling the scene. And I think that's kind of continued in Seattle probably more than most other places.
It's really interesting. Travis DeCuire joining us for a few more moments. You know, we no longer do, but we had a vacation home in Big Sky for about 10 years. I love that state. I love Montana. So after your freshman year of college, you transferred to Montana. What was that like when you got there, and what was it about that program in school that made you feel like it was the right place for you?
Winning. I'd won all my life, middle school, AAU, all those types of things. And then in high school at Mercer Island, we competed for championships every year. I was fortunate enough to play on a team that was nationally ranked 3 out of my 4 years. And so going to Chaminade, I didn't experience that. And losing was very difficult for me to swallow. I didn't see that in our future. And I wanted an opportunity to go somewhere where that was going to be a part of the culture. And the University of Montana became that for me, very similar to my experience at Mercer Island in terms of style of play, the culture, the way the program was run. And so for me, it was a no-brainer after taking my visit. And I was fortunate enough to make 2 trips to the NCAA tournament and be a part of winning there.
You know, you were there, so I know how much it means to you. But you know how the business works, right? You have the kind of success that you've had, and your name is going to be mentioned for other jobs. How do you go about dealing with that kind of attention?
Everything's day-to-day. I've had dreams for this program, the growth, the opportunities to do some special things. We're starting to accomplish those things. So I wake up every morning in a Montana Grizzly, proud to represent their community and to lead a program that I once played for. I think at the end of the day, winning on and off the court is the most important thing. And I think I'm in a great place to continue to do that.
All right, so when you look at this year's Michigan team, as you point out, they're not the same as last year's team. There are some differences. What is the number one message to your players before tip-off?
We got to defend. We need to defend at a championship level if we want to be on that floor and competing as the clock winds down. And if you want to be in the game down the stretch, the defense is always going to be what allows you to compete. And then the offense will take care of itself. So we'll go out and try to compete and fight for rebounds and loose balls and hustle at the highest level. And hopefully when we look up at the scoreboard, we're happy with it.
I'm really looking forward to it. The head coach of Montana, Travis DeCuire, my guest. He has led Montana to 3 regular season titles, 2 tournament titles, 26-8, and they'll run it back. They take on Michigan tomorrow. Travis, really nice to have you on the show. Good luck with that, and really nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
Great
it.
To have you. Thank you. Medford. Trapper in Medford. Hey, Trapper, what's up?
Hey, Jimmy, how you doing today?
Good, Trap. How about you?
Doing good. Cancer has spread, so I get to start IV chemo tomorrow, but we keep battling. We're going to beat it.
You know it.
I'd like to do a shout-out to brother Alex Trebek for his courage and humor, but also, I got to tell you, Jim, talk about hitting the daily double on inspiration today, catching Herenda and Jeff Jones. Did Jeff... I'm battling metastatic prostate cancer too, bro. Much gratitude for talking about this disease and serving up a double shot of courage to thousands of us battling this bug. I'll think of you tomorrow, my brother, when they put that spike in my chest. Also, gotta go regional to Greg Herenda and the Knights. I grew up in Bergen County in North Jersey. On my old man's knee, I took my first sip of beer at the Clam Broth House, which he referenced. Back then, it wasn't the Sopranos that ran Bergen County. It was the Boyardo family. I know because I dated Michelle Boyardo. I also dated girls from FDU, raced for Pinks on 287 on Friday nights, ditched half of my senior year to go down the shore and hang at the Stone Pony in AP, watching Bruce and Southside Johnny. We all know that Bruce is God in Jersey until last night when Greg Herenda and the Knights usurped the crown and stole the throne to trampdom. Thanks, Greg, for your jersey no retreat, no surrender attitude, babe. It's guys like you that keep me and the rest of the great Garden State going long, strong, and proud. As for tomorrow, Jimmy, bring it on, bitch. As Prairie View learned, you don't mess with Jersey. Tramps like us, babe. Thanks for the dime, Jimmy. I'm out.
Love you, brother. Trapper, I'm thinking of you tomorrow. The jungle's thinking of you tomorrow, man. Kill that bitch.
Good night,